Thank you very much for the introduction. I'm Andre, and I will be presenting today Throwhammer attacks over the network and defenses. So what's this talk about? Essentially, it's about fast networks, very dense DRAM, like modern DRAM is, and smart NICs, more specifically RDMA, coming together to produce Rowhammer over RDMA, which we call Throwhammer. Now, what is this more exactly? It's a Rowhammer attack over the network, which requires absolutely no code execution on the victim machine and no changes to the network stack. These are the vanilla network stacks that are present in existing kernels and in existing drivers. In addition, we also introduce defenses against Throwhammer. The main idea is we want to isolate these RDMA buffers, which are vulnerable to attacks from the outside. Although there is a challenge in that, it's not trivial at all, and we do come up with a solution, a generic algorithm for this that we call ALICE. Now, without further ado, let's start with a bit of background. What is DRAM? Well, DRAM is made out of arrays or rows of bits, essentially. And these bits are held in cells which are implemented as a simple capacitor with a very small capacitance, especially in newer, more dense DRAM. Now, these capacitors leak charge over time. They're physical objects. They're not perfect. That's why regularly DRAM must be refreshed. That is what the dynamic in its name stands for, the D. Now, how does one read from DRAM? It's not exactly as simple as just picking up a bit there. Actually, when one wants to read from a row, you activate it and store its contents in a buffer called, naturally enough, the row buffer, and from which future columns or future accesses to columns will be served. Now, if you want to read from a different row, you deactivate the one you've just activated and open another one. And if you want to read from a different one, you keep doing this. Now, what has been discovered is that if you do this reading often enough and you keep reading from the exact same row over and over again, eventually it leaks a bit of charge, and if done fast enough, it's enough to trigger a bit flip, what you see there. That red cell has had its bit flip from either 1 to 0 or the other way around. Now, that's nice and all. So a bit more details. The first study was published in 2014 about how to trigger Rowhammer from software. This defect has actually been known for quite some time, but it's present in DDR3, DRAM, and newer, according to that first study. And affected devices have since been found in pretty much every form factor. So from enterprise class servers to your mobile phone in your pocket, potentially all of them are vulnerable to Rowhammer. And what's even more important, that the particular cells which are vulnerable to Rowhammer seem to be specific to the particular integrated circuits. So they would make a sort of a fingerprint of a particular device. But what's interesting here is that because they're specific, they're reproducible. That means once an attacker knows a bit flip is there, they can trigger it reliably. Now, how does one trigger Rowhammer? Well, you need about 500,000 accesses over one refresh interval to drain the capacitors for most vulnerable DRAM chips. But to do this, you need very high spatial and temporal locality. That's why CPU caches often get in the way of accidental hammering, and that's one reason why it was discovered so late, even though DRAM has been getting more and more dense over time. Now, it can be triggered on purpose, obviously, if you flush the cache using native instructions, if your architecture supports it. If not, you can always use memory access patterns that evict the cache, or you could just use uncached memory, like DMA buffers, for example. Now, it can be triggered and has successfully been triggered and exploited from multiple scenarios. So one would be unprivileged native code, for example, in a co-hosted VM situation where you could flip bits outside of the memory allocated to your particular VM. You could flip bits in a co-hosted VM, which is obviously a massive, massive break of isolation. It has also been exploited from JavaScript, in a browser, and also from WebGL code running in a browser, on an integrated GPU, and that is a sort of a sister project at DeFu called Glitch. However, all these attacks require one thing, code execution of one form or another on the victim machine. That privilege is quite rare. Think about client-server architecture. Servers usually do not execute arbitrary code handed to them by the client. And even in situations where the victim does give that privilege, that can always be revoked, say, with no script for browsers. So are we safe? Hold that thought. Let's look at network speeds over time. We see that they have been increasing wildly over the past 20 or so years. And let's just mark one particular moment in time there. 2010, when DDR3 came about and we've started getting vulnerable DIMMs. Now, let's go back to that number, 500,000 accesses per refresh interval. That's about 8 million accesses a second. And if we're talking about networks, let's just make them packets. Now, 8 million packets a second is completely feasible with 10 Gbps. So let's plot that here, shall we? And now you notice we have this rather large, what I would like to call danger zone, where we find ourselves in, where the networks are fast enough to potentially trigger bit flips, and we do have vulnerable DIMMs. Now, should we panic? Not so fast, literally, because network accesses don't just imply a single memory access. Network I/O is a lot of things. Let's assume we're expecting a reply from this server. So first, the CPU needs to copy the data from the application buffer into a kernel buffer. Then the NIC reads from there, sends it over the network. The receiving NIC does the exact same thing, and then interrupts the kernel, which then copies the packet over into the client application's buffer. Lots of memory accesses there. And indeed, every packet I/O in general implies many memory accesses, and these reduce the control we have over targeting these accesses. And in addition to this, most of them are cached. So let's say we're safer against Rowhammer? Well, maybe not. Enter RDMA. Short for remote direct memory access, it is high-speed, low-latency networking, and it is starting to be used pretty much everywhere where speed and latency counts. So in data centers, in high-performance applications, and it's starting to be available also in public cloud. Public cloud. So on Azure, you can just go and spin up several VMs connected amongst them through RDMA. Now, how does it exactly work? Well, remember this picture of the traditional network. Well, with RDMA, you cut out the middleman and literally have the NIC just read directly from pre-configured buffers and write directly to them on the receiving side. Now, you kind of start seeing this. With RDMA, we have a client that can request data from a server from particular locations of its choice, because the server has obviously registered quite a couple of such buffers, because registration is the expensive part. The NIC does uncached reads from these locations at a frankly irresponsible rate of millions every second. You see where this is going, don't you? Can we trigger Rowhammer? The answer is yes. Yes, we can. And we have found bit flips in our setup. So our setup is two Mellanox ConnectX 4 NICs at 40 gigabits per second connected together. I would like to stress that these NICs are old. They're two generations ago, so Mellanox already has ConnectX 5 and 6. So this isn't cutting edge hardware or anything. And our software runs such. The client simply asks the server to send it data. That's it, nothing more. And we found bit flips over two. The two lines represent different memory setups. One of them is Hynix RAM and the other is Corsair RAM. Regardless, on both situations, we found hundreds of unique bit flips within half an hour. And this is without precise targeting or anything. This is just brute forcing two memory addresses and seeing what happens. We also wanted to see how vulnerable slower speed networks are. So we throttled the packet rate down to simulate lower speed networks. We found that pretty much the exact same bit flip rate is shown on networks down to 26 gigabits per second. And we've even managed to find, within that half hour, bit flips with 10 gigabits per second. Now, what can you do with this? It's all nice, but what can you actually do with this? Well, let's make the threat model slightly more explicit. So we have a malicious client, which is connected via RDMA to a server. A server that is completely trusted, bug-free, and the only thing it needs to do is respond to the client's request. By doing this, it triggers Rowhammer in itself. Now, how would you make something useful out of this? Well, we did an exploit on RDMA memcached. What's that? It's a RDMA-enabled fork of memcached. What's memcached? It's a key-value store, basically a hash map in memory for caching databases. Right, so in a nutshell, this exploit basically relies on templating the memory to find which bit flips we can use. What does this mean? Is we allocate large objects, hammer the memory, and see if there are any changes in the values of these objects due to bit flips. Therefore, we find where the our exploitable bit flips are. We find what attack vectors exactly we can use. Then we just spray the memory with hash colliding target items. We can make hash collisions really easily because they don't use a cryptographically secure hash function, sorry. And then we use our Rowhammer primitive. We flip a bit in one of the relevant pointers to add a counterfeit item that we control to the collision chain, which we can then use to escalate it, either read from the processor's address space or use various pointers there to escalate the issue. Now, this is a very simplified scheme of how memcached stores items. In essence, it has a couple of pointers, which is the item metadata, and we control the key and value areas. Now, what we do is we chain several of these together, we hammer the hnex pointer, and when a bit flips, when one of the lesser significant bit flips in hnext, it points inside the data area where we have conveniently placed a counterfeit item. And we can use this counterfeit item, either reading from it to obtain things off the heap, for example, from memcached, like heap pointers and everything, or we could use these pointers, the previous and next pointers, to set up an unlinking attack. I won't go into much more detail. You can read in the paper because I've got some more things to deal with. Right, now how would you defend against this? Well, you could always don't use RDMA, but then that means you have to pay the price of a traditional network stack, and RDMA was invented for this exact reason. You could, and even then, you might not be 100% safe. Remember that danger area. You do have mitigations, or let's say dilution of memory accesses within that area without RDMA, but it might still be dangerous. Therefore, I propose isolating these untrusted buffers. But that's not quite trivial, as we will see. Why? Is because isolation must be done at DRAM level. Ultimately, you need to isolate rows from each other. It doesn't matter what the physical addresses say. Unfortunately, the CPU and most software, for that matter, all software, for that matter, only sees physical addresses or virtual addresses if it's even less privileged. And again, unfortunately, a memory controller has a surprising amount of freedom to map between these two, and rarely are these completely documented. Therefore, a heuristics-based model on physical addresses just simply won't do, and here's an example of why. We have a buffer on the left, and we decide, okay, let's just take 1 and 8, 2 megabyte areas, we should be perfectly safe, and transform them into guard areas. Perfectly fine for rank 0. Unfortunately, this mapping exhibits a standard JDEC thing called rank mirroring, which means that this gets mapped very weirdly into rank one, which creates a, say, vulnerable area in the form of five. Five can trigger bit flips outside of this buffer. Now, to address this, we have developed Alice, which is a generic policy-driven isolation algorithm, which works independent of memory mapping. I mean, you do have to know the memory mapping, but once you know it, it works exactly the same. As for mappings, we support the common memory controllers, Intel, AMD, and some ARM, which were either documented in case of AMD through by the manufacturer, or in case of Intel and ARM reverse engineered by different works. Now, this means we're safe. Now, we decided to, well, dog food a bit and protected a couple of applications. We implemented the Alice algorithm in user space and created drop-in changes, essentially LD preload libraries for HERD and RDMA memcached. HERD is also a key value store very similar to RDMA memcached, except it was developed with RDMA in mind. Okay, so for HERD, we needed a 10-line of source diff. It's trivial, and the only reason why it's 10 lines and not one line is because HERD did some weird things with the POSIX shared memory, which we had to emulate. And for RDMA memcached, we used a binary patch because they did not supply the source code, which goes to show you that this is simple enough to implement that you can actually just binary patch stuff with it. Now, what would you need to pay, like a cost for allocating these buffers? We measured this for a, obviously it depends on your memory configuration and geometry, but for this particular configuration, you can see that the time cost, represented in blue with the circles, is pretty much negligible, sub-second even, for up to 128 megabytes. While the memory cost, in our opinion, remains very reasonable even for gigabyte-sized buffers, as you can see on the right-hand side of the graph. So this is the cost that you pay once at initialization time, or when you get your RDMA buffers. But what impact does this have on performance? Well, the runtime overhead, we measured it on RDMA memcached, it's essentially none. The small differences you can see in the red line versus the blue is likely because of lack of transparent huge pages, since isolating, we do not map contiguous virtual memory areas into contiguous physical memory areas. Therefore, we lose huge page support. Now, as conclusions, we introduced a new attack vector, Rowhammer, over the network. We've shown that RDMA buffers are a viable attack surface in real binaries. We've introduced a generic low overhead isolation algorithm for allocating untrusted memory areas called Alice. And we will also be publishing our attack code and Alice as open source on GitHub, so check them out. And thank you very much for your attention and any questions.
Nice work. So what, let's imagine that in future Nix would have additional cache level. So you say that right now Nix do not have caching. What if future Nix will implement that? Because from the perspective, from the performance perspective, I think it makes sense to cache data that you send over the network, doesn't it? And would it prevent?
So I am aware of a technology that has the NIC writing directly into the CPU caches, weirdly enough, of a destination computer. But I'm not aware of any benefit to caching sends. Because unless you have to send the same packet over and over again, which if you do, you're probably doing something wrong, you don't get any benefits from caching. Because the data is either going to be different, since you're sending a different packet, or is going to simply be from a different address.
Okay, so I wanted to ask whether the caching level would help against Rowhammer attacks, but since caching doesn't make sense in the first place, probably this caching doesn't
To ask your question, yes, it would help dissipate, so to say, the memory accesses. However, for CPU caches, attacks have shown that you can just access memory in such a way that it evicts the cache, so you could probably do the exact same thing from over the network.
But it would reduce the throughput.
I'm sorry?
It would reduce the throughput because you would have to...
Yes, so it would make the life more difficult for an attacker, obviously, but it would not make it impossible.
Yeah, and caching, as you say, probably doesn't make sense.
Yes, but you never know. Maybe I'm missing something.
Any more questions? Hey, Yubing from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. So actually, I asked some hardware guys, and they told me that basically for DDR4, Rowhammer is hard to occur, right? So
yes.
I found that in your experiment, you used DDR3. So
yes, we did. So DDR4 has this technology called targeted row refresh. What it does is essentially monitor activations of various rows, and if that surpasses a certain threshold, it automatically refreshes adjacent rows. I am not sure whether this was tried on desktop DDR4, but I do have quite, let's say, believable information that at least LPDDR4's TRR does not completely help eliminate Rowhammer. It makes life much, much more difficult, so it reduces the number of bit flips by a factor of 10 or 100, but it does not eliminate them completely.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see if there are some data on
DDR4,
right? Planning
on doing some more Rowhammer work on DDR4
as
well,
so
stay tuned for that.
Thank you for a great talk. I'm trying to figure out, could someone use Alice to prevent Rowhammer attacks as well, just regular Warhammer, by changing all allocation? Is that even practical?
Oh, yes, except, if you end up isolating all of your buffers, essentially, the worst case scenario, you would have to pay quite a high cost, like 2x memory overhead for everything. Now, isolating just a tiny bit of an application like an RDMA buffer is far more feasible and performance friendly than simply isolating everything. But as a concept, when we developed Alice, the first thing we thought was this needs to go in the kernel and you should just have a flag for mmap, just map_isolate or something. And you as a programmer probably know best whether this is a buffer you can trust or not. And I consider it should be a standard feature in an operating system to tell it, look, just keep this memory well isolated so it can't harm anything else.
And if you are willing to tolerate the 2x memory overhead because security
is
security?
Oh, yes. Then it's perfectly fine.
All right.
That was how it was designed. And yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for this interesting and scary work. My question is, how susceptible do you think 10, 40, 100 gig Ethernet is to these types of attacks?
Do you mean regular Ethernet?
So regular non-RDMA.
Non-RDMA.
Just standard internet accessible, plain old Ethernet.
I would be hard-pressed to give you an answer that isn't just a guess or an educated guess, but I would say it's not impossible, but it would be more work for an attacker, potentially orders of magnitude more work. But again, I think it is perfectly possible, and if you get extraordinarily unlucky, you might get a bit flip because of just simple network I/O. Although, if it's rare enough, you might just chalk that to, I don't know, a cosmic ray or something. So it's debatable whether we've actually had bit flips even over the network before, because we might not even be identifying them properly.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.